just like to welcome our next speaker, Dr. Helen Reeves.
Hello, just like.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. Well, as the other speakers have said, it is a great honour to be here to talk to you tonight. Coming from the northeast of the northeast of England, growing up in the northeast around the demise of the coal industry when I was growing up, sadly, but also being taken to Hartley and to see the memorial from Hartley and the development of some of the legacy there that developed the two the legislation around the developing of.
You should check the sound has apparently gone off.
Is there something on that phone?
Doesn't appear to be a. Oh, there.
The little red button on the bottom of it,
yeah.
Just hold it in.
You reckon? Let's stick it. Oh, there you go. That better?
No. Nothing?
Okay.
Yes?
Okay.
Thank you.
Plan B.
Thank you. Coming from the northeast of England and learning and seeing the demise of the coal industry, but also learning from some of its legacy of history with, sadly, the Hartley disaster, is something that certainly has developed my career as an engineering geologist and certainly taken me to the work at BGS that I do now. The Aberfan Tribunal had numerous publications, technical reports, non-technical reports, that discussed the causes and the effects of the disaster. And most importantly, of course, as mentioned, the Aberfan Tribunal report, where 136 witnesses and 21 individuals gave written submissions. Many of our learner colleagues, Dr. Woodland, one of my colleagues from what was then IGS, of course now BGS, Professor Bishop from Imperial College, Dr. Evans from the University College of Swansea, Dr. Hutchinson from Imperial College, Professor Nash from King's College, Professor Moore from the University of Sheffield, Mr. Wardell from what's now Wardell, Mr. Williams from Scott Wilson, Kirkpatrick and Partners, all submitted reports which show certainly a lot of the information that was presented in the tribunal and have certainly helped to take things forward. But just to look at a few of those, for example, one of the bits of information was presented by Dr. Woodland, who's the assistant director at IGS, now BGS then. He presented a report on the geological report of Aberfan tip disaster, where he summarised the geology, the hydrogeology, tip failures, the conclusions of what happened at the site. Have some of these, I went into the depths of the BGS archive and I have pulled out some of these documents, so they're at the front of the table. If anybody hasn't seen them and would like to see them, please come forward at the end. But similarly, there were also some amazing experimentation that was done at the time. This is just one of the examples where the geotechnical investigations into the causes and circumstances was undertaken in a report, which was done by Bishop, Hutchinson, Tenham and Evans. And here in this report is a model of the Aberfan tip complex, which was built at a scale of 1 to 100 in the Swansea University labs, overseen by Dr. Evans and Professor Naylor. And this was constructed to help understand better the tip complex and to help understand qualitatively the potential modes of failure. And I just think they're absolutely fantastic images and show the way that many of the problems were thought through and some of the conclusions obtained. And this is one of the final ones I just want to look at from the tribunal. This again was in the Bishop, Hutchinson, Penn and Evans reports. And these were 2D models that were undertaken of TIP 7. And they were built in the seepage tanks in Imperial College under the direction of Professor Francis. And these were done to help demonstrate the various mechanisms of failure and understand the interaction with water. And of course, those weak layers that Ted mentioned before and their interaction with some of the causes of the slope failure. So, as we've heard, there were from the tribunal, there were a number of recommendations and outcomes. Many of the things that Bob mentioned just before around inappropriate placement of the tips, the tipping methods, ineffective management. And also one of the other things was the site conditions at the time. There'd been significant heavy rainfall. So the lessons that we have now learned regarding the description of tips in the legislation, as Bob described, how they should be treated as engineered structures, and help to actually develop those mines and quarry regulations. But also they've helped to emphasise a number of points, enabling local authorities to have access to tipping plans, ensuring that workers are properly trained. But sadly, as we heard Ted mention, is that overseas, sadly, we've only seen a handful of minor failures, as Bob highlighted just before. But sadly, overseas, we're still seeing a number of these events happen. And this is a table that was recently published in New Civil Engineer and compiled by Professor Dave Petley, which shows that there are just under 1,000 deaths since January 2011 around flow slides in mines and quarries. And sadly, more recently I've been involved, just off this list, going out into Hungary to the Kolontar disaster and helping give some help and guidance to Hungarian colleagues after one of these events. And when you see for yourself the first sign of a tailing dam's failure and the effect it has on local people, and when you talk to those local people, it's fairly harrowing and something that will last with me for the rest of my career. After Aberfan, most of the spoil was removed from removed to the Nook Tip or put further in the Merthyr Vale. And the remaining spoil was reprofiled. Stability was also improved by the addition of drainage tunnels to draw water from the aquifers and further regrading of the tip and grassing. And of course, it was then let to be used as grazing and agricultural ground. But as an engineering geologist, one of the most important things, apart from the improvement in the regulations, which we've heard from Bob, is actually the impact it had on our profession. It actually helped give an impetus to the increasing emphasis on the applied subdivisions of geology. And these were starting to gain much more recognition and to be a strengthening part of not just the traditional geological mapping, but complementing that with the applied engineering geology, hydrogeology disciplines. And it was actually mentioned in the findings from the tribunal. I'd just like to read that to you. It was finding 16 in the Davies Tribunal report. And managers and surveyors should as soon as possible be made aware of the rudiments of soil mechanics and groundwater conditions. The statutory qualifications for managers and surveyors should be amended to include awareness of the rudiments of soil mechanics and hydrogeology, in addition to geology, which is already comprised in the syllabus. And this certainly helped increase the contribution and the establishment of a number of our postgraduate master's courses in the UK, particularly in engineering geology and hydrogeology. And it also started the creation in 1967 of the engineering geology unit at the Institute of Geological Sciences, now the British Geological Survey, which is where I work. Additionally, the Aberfan disaster and the resulting tribunal report also raised awareness of general hillside stability issues and problems in South Wales, but also led to a wider acknowledgement nationally, not just on tip slopes, but also on natural slopes. Although, of course, the effects of slope movement in South Wales, Caulfield had been known well by the local communities for many years and decades before. And also there was some of the first remarkable work and early attempts by Knox in 1927 to actually document landslides and the distribution of landslides in South Wales. But one of the immediate effects of the new legislation, as mentioned by Bob, was that the National Coal Board and also the Welsh Development Agency invested more than £50 million into investigations of existing tips and their stability. And actually, in addition, as a result of the Welsh Office initiative, which was sponsored by the then Department of the Environment, additional work was also undertaken and funded to look at natural slopes. And there was a large programme of work from 1976 until 1991 that looked into these challenges and made considerable advances. These studies first concentrated in assessing instabilities specifically in the areas of the Eastern Coalfield, around areas like East Penchwin, Bourneville landslides, where mapping and ground investigations through drilling was undertaken. And following this, actually further work looking particularly around the assessment of landslides in the Rhondda Valley. These were mapped.
Sorry, I didn't realise.
Where the type and distribution of activity in the Rhondda Valley were also investigated through mapping, and subsequent reports were then published. And the latter, more significant study was actually the broad investigation of the South Wales coalfield, where the type, the distribution, and the activity of the landslides were investigated, and this information was then compiled into large reports and written up. And this certainly laid the foundations for the eventual creation of what is now known as the National Landslide Database. This database was produced in the 1990s by Geomorphological Services Limited through a Department of the Environment funded piece of work. And since 2000, the British Geological Survey has taken over managing and maintaining that database, and it's now got over 17,500 records. And has a variety of information on the types of those events in those records. As well as the development of the National Landslide Database, we can now use information technology. The application of geographical information systems made the communication of slope instability hazards to planning and development community in particular much easier and quicker. At the click of a button, we can now create maps and information using the geographical information systems, and we can generate maps like the one shown on this slide using the BGS digital mapping information from the National Landslide Database, and very quickly and easily analyse the information about landslide data spatially, their types and distributions, in a matter of minutes. Also, now we have different ways to map and understand these features. We're using much more things like 3D digital aerial photography to assess natural slopes. And these give us much more information where we can actually generate the information in the office We can then put them on tablet PCs and take that information with us, where in the past we used to walk around in the field with, of course, aerial photos, and actually check that information and verify it. In the same way, the way we now monitor its slope and stability is very different. We've moved on from the more traditional surveying techniques and methodologies, where we would undertake slope and stability monitoring and monitor movement, to now developing and using ground-based terrestrial systems, such as terrestrial LIDAR, geophysical non-invasive techniques. And these can help us to understand movement as well as monitor change over a number of years and days. Aerial photography have moved on from, and now we can get the images almost instantly from the application and use of drones. I shouldn't use the word drones, it should use, politically correct now, we have to use UAVs at BGS because of the possible connotations. But of course what we also use is a lot of satellite data now. And one of the interesting tools, particularly in this area for slope and stability monitoring, is using radar data to monitor motion over a number of years down to millimetric scales. And then we go on to slope modelling. Again, computers and information systems are helping with this. Geographical information systems in particular, enabling us to look at slopes in two, and then of course using slope stability packages in 3D. And then we can use this information most importantly to communicate slope instability hazards and information to a wide variety of stakeholders. And moving into the future, what future research is doing now is moving from static 2 and 3D models to actually look at modelling landslides and slope instability from the static to the dynamic forecastable models, enabling a wider remit of information to go out to a wider set of stakeholders and being able to communicate to those stakeholders slope instability hazards and the potential of when things can change based on changing meteorological conditions, for example. And this work can only happen through working in partnership with people and working in partnership with other professions. And this work particularly has been involved through the Natural Hazard Partnership work, which I've been involved with, where we're bringing together geologists, geomorphologists, hydrologists, hydrogeologists, meteorologists to solve these problems. And sadly, this is something that didn't happen in Aberfan, but hopefully in the future, not just in the UK, but also taking that and translating that internationally, we can actually ensure these things don't happen in the future. Thank you.